It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review in for Paul Guggenheimer. In today's world, many of our daily transactions are done online. From shopping to paying bills, we are at a greater risk of having our personal information stolen. That increase in cyber crimes has kept federal prosecutors busy here in Western Pennsylvania. Joining me in Studio A is David Hickton, the United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania. David Hickton, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Andy.
So it seems like every day we're hearing new stories about hackers stealing credit card information, passwords, and online information. In fact, today we heard another case of banks being hacked, perhaps by Russian hackers. Why are we seeing so many more of these cases coming up?
I think it's because the internet has become so central to all of our transactions. I saw a data point recently that 20 years ago, two-way communications over the internet were about 3% of all two-way communications, and today they're about 97%. So in our day-to-day lives, we know that if you have children, the internet has become the place where they receive their assignments, their sports schedules. If you run a business, the internet has become central to that, and even some of our important infrastructure essentials are use the internet. So it's an open forum. It's really easy to use, and therefore it's easy access for criminals.
So do you think, given that we're online so much, we're, Americans are constantly going and using their computers, as you said, we're doing more and more shopping transactions online. Is there a way to stop hackers from having the kind of impact they are having now? Is there anything we can be doing better as individuals or as a country that would turn this back? Or is it just an inevitability that
There are many things that can be done, and because we're sort of in a fluid stage of the development of a new technology which makes communications faster and better, it's going to evolve. On a personal level, there are many things individuals can do, such as changing their passwords regularly. And if you're more committed to protection, you can create firewalls, or you can have dual-factor authentication, which you can get through Google, where you have two passwords to get into your system. And you can do as I do. You can have a person come into your house on a quarterly basis to just sweep your system to see if someone is in it. Companies do much more. There's a whole burgeoning industry of cybersecurity experts who are working with companies. From the law enforcement standpoint, I've made it a top priority, and we've received recognition for the fact that we're doing a very good job in this arena, and that's because we have the assets and the commitment to do it.
So that's a little bit of an understatement, right? You've had high-profile indictments the last few months against first Chinese military hackers,
right,
and then the Russian criminal hackers. And in each case, you know, here in Pittsburgh, we hear the questions from the national media saying, well, why Pittsburgh? Why is this coming out of Western Pennsylvania? Why is it such a high priority for you to take on cybercrime?
Well, I've been in my job for 4 years, and when I arrived, I took stock of what I thought the problems were. And growing up in Western Pennsylvania, I'd seen the evolution of Pittsburgh as the cradle of the American Industrial Revolution and all the challenges that our industry had faced. And among them, I perceived that there was a challenge to industrial and espionage over the internet. And then I took stock of the assets I had at my disposal, and I realized that we had a real strong team in the U.S. Attorney's Office. We had perhaps the best cyber squad in the FBI here, and we had two institutional assets here that really serve the entire country and the world. One is the NCFTA, National Cyber Forensic Training Alliance, right here on Technology Drive, which is a public-private partnership which exists nowhere else, where they work on some of the most difficult problems and provide a forum for government and private industry to come together to assess threats and deal with them. And then in a partnership with the Department of Homeland Security and CMU, we have CSERT, or the Computer Crime Emergency Response Team, which is yet another one-of-a-kind asset. And so in looking at those assets and assessing the problems, it was my sense is that this is the crime of our age. This is the 21st century crime platform, which requires a 21st century solution. And I was going to commit to it in my work, and I think we have been recognized as becoming what the FBI director called the Silicon Valley of law enforcement in the cybercrime arena.
Well, can you talk about that a little bit more? Because of the successes you've had here, and because of the cases you've brought, I understand you're going to be expanding the office. The Justice Department is looking at Pittsburgh and saying we want to give you more resources and we want to replicate what you're doing. How is that going to unfold?
Well, we're clearly going to become the model for how they do it elsewhere. And I would be the first to say that we need to have a robust enforcement platform around the country. But we are going to put more assistant United States attorneys on this, and the FBI has announced that they're going to have a second cyber squad. And I think that's good news for Western Pennsylvania, and I think the FBI director has said when good work is being done, you invest in it. And that really speaks as much to his team as it does to ours. But we work cooperatively. I mean, we're just not waiting for these cases to come. We're going out and getting them. And my sense is that there's plenty of work for everybody to do in this arena.
Do you? The other thing that I don't think a lot of people realize when they think about cybercrime, they think of it as something that's happening only on the computer. But from a Western Pennsylvania perspective, what kind of impact does it have when it's big companies here, U.S. Steel, that's being targeted for, you know, in the first indictment you brought, it was Chinese hackers.
Right.
Does that have an impact on actual jobs in the local economy?
I believe it does. I believe these companies who were victims in the case you described, which we brought in May, where we indicted five members of the People's Liberation Army in China for industrial espionage against U.S. Steel, Alcoa, Westinghouse, Solar World, Allegheny Technologies, and the United Steelworkers, that that has a direct downstream effect on real people, and it impacts people in real ways. These companies have dealt with every challenge that you can throw at them, and the steelworkers as well, in a widening global economy with increased competition. And all they really want is a level playing field. What they should not have to deal with is just 21st century burglary. And so our commitment was that we were going to look into this. And I have said in public forums that when people steal from U.S. Steel after they make an investment in technology to respond to the competitive challenges they have to deal with, and they are unable to capture that investment, that leads to a decline in their sales. That leads to the closing of factories. And when factories close, people lose their jobs and lose their homes. It's just that simple.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, in for Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is David Hickton, the United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania. David, when you brought the indictments against the hackers, the first against the Chinese military and the second against Russian criminals, there were critics who came out and said, why bother bringing these indictments? There's very little chance of ever tracking down these defendants and making an arrest. But you went ahead with it anyway. So why bring these indictments if you're not going to get an arrest?
Yeah, I would assert that the critics are few. And in fact, that there was a huge pent-up demand to do this for a long period of time. And my prime partner in this endeavor, John Carlin, the Assistant Attorney General for National Security, the Department of Justice, was specifically asked in his confirmation hearing, when are you going to open up the toolbox and bring criminal indictments? And so there have been some, though, as you point out, who have said, you're not going to get them here. And to that I say this. Some are willing to accept the status quo, but that's not what we're here to do. That's not why I took this job. I believe in a can-do approach to this work. And the first step is finding out who's doing it. And then if it's violating the law, charge it. And that's what we did. I have said that I'm prepared to use every legal and diplomatic means, or any means proper, to bring these individuals to justice in a courtroom here in Pittsburgh, and that remains my position. But as we are in a fluid and evolving setting, it may be different than something we can expect or imagine, and it may be different in the case we brought against the five individuals who were part of the Signal Intelligence Unit in the Chinese Army in May, than it is in the case we brought against Yevgeny Bogachev, perhaps the number one cyber criminal in the world, from Russia in June. And that may be different than how we deal with Adam Busby, who we charged for all that chaos and crime he committed against the University of Pittsburgh a couple years ago. He's in Ireland. It's going to be a different situation. But I say we do not stop enforcing the law because of the nature of the threat. We adapt.
And have you seen an impact from bringing the indictments? Is Bogachev still in Russia, still doing the same sorts of cyber crimes that you charged him with? Is that your belief that he's still out there doing it? Or have you seen – is there a dampening effect by just bringing the indictment and bringing attention to it?
for reasons which I'm sure you understand and your viewers, and I'm sorry, your listeners would understand, I'm not in the position to be specific. But I can say this, that we believe that just by announcing the indictments, there's been a positive impact. In the case of the China intrusions, I believe that the unit that we have indicted has ceased its activity. With regard to the indictment against Bogachev with respect to Game Over Zeus malware and CryptoLocker, we, in addition to bringing criminal indictments, used the civil process to do an interdiction of this criminal enterprise, and we saw an immediate cessation of the criminal activity. So just by bringing the indictments, there's a positive effect, as your question points out. But we remain committed, and we're taking all steps, much of which I can't discuss, to try and bring them all to justice. And we have other investigations ongoing.
Obviously, today in the news is the story about banks being targeted. Specifically, I guess the story was that perhaps it was Russian hackers. I've written stories at the Tribune Review in my articles about how when banks are attacked, the public often doesn't know what's happening. They don't see what's going on. Banks often, consumers, whatever money they lose out of their account is written off, and the banks turn it over to insurers, and it just becomes a cost that we all pay. Can you give us a sense of whether you believe the problem is bigger than the public sees? Is there more hacking specifically of financial institutions than the public would ever know about?
It is. And I'm grateful for your interest in it, both as a print journalist and through this media. And I do as much outreach as I'm invited to do, because I think a part of my job is to sound the alarm, because we need the public's awareness about this problem, because the port of entry for cybercrime of all types is through the individual victims. And, cybercrime can be seen as a circle or spokes on a wheel. Cyber is the platform for child predators. Cyber is the platform for thieves who would steal your MAC card number or your financial data. Cyber is the platform for just hacktivists or people who just wish to call attention to themselves, as we saw with the anonymous threats. And cyber is now the platform for nation-state actors or large-scale international criminals. And all of this is a risk to all of us. I don't want anyone to be alarmed about it, because the good news is we have very good people working on it, but we do need the public to be more aware.
You talked earlier about steps that the public can take, changing passwords, being more vigilant about what they're doing. But a lot of the things that would make people safer requires them to do something, requires them to change the password. You can't just have 123456 as your password. Is your sense that the public is the public willing to take those steps, to do the additional things, or is it too much of an inconvenience to have to, change my password every month or every 6 weeks?
I think the public is willing. I think there's a different challenge, because it's sort of humorous when people see me and they say, if this is such a big problem, how can such a small step be so helpful? And friends and business associates often mock me when I say change your password every 30 days. But that is truly a simple step. If I were to have the attention of one person to talk to one-on-one and say, what can you do to protect yourself and us, it's change the password every 30 days.
You said for yourself that you bring somebody in to sweep through your computer systems. Are there other steps that you've taken? Do you still shop online? Do you still, do you do online banking? Or are there things that now that you know what hackers are up to that you just would never do online yourself personally?
Well, I would be reluctant to give specific information what I do. But I would tell you that I'm just like everyone else who I serve. I'm just the same as anyone else who lives in Western Pennsylvania. It is a necessity almost today to be engaged in the cyber world if you're going to be engaged in commerce or do any transactions. I've always been a little bit more cautious because of my job, and certainly steps have been taken with regard to my work portal and my home stuff to harden the system to protect me in light of the profile we have in bringing these cases. These cases we brought here in Western Pennsylvania in May and June are first of their kind. They're path-breaking. And I'm really grateful that we had the people and we were able to put them together. There was huge achievements in the work that was done from a law enforcement standpoint, but it's really just the first step in what's going to be a long struggle.
It should be noted you're not just being overly cautious. I remember seeing even the attorney general was targeted at one point. At least that was the claim, whether his information was breached or not. But you certainly become a target that way.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most frequent cases we've called attention to is stolen identity fraud for income tax returns. That's a huge problem. And the attorney general was one of the victims of that, where people get your name and your social security number and file a fake tax return on your behalf and goes to a third party and collected it without your knowledge.
Just as a reminder, this is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review and for Paul Guggenheimer. My guest today is David Hickton, the United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania. We've been talking a lot about the consumer end of it, but you know, the other indictment that you brought really focused on corporate espionage. And I'm wondering if you're seeing corporations being more vigilant now as well, that perhaps in the past they didn't take this as seriously as they could have. Are you seeing them listening more to the threat?
They are. And I don't think corporations failed to take it seriously. I think they were aware of it. I think what we've changed that's been positive is how the government responds to it in two levels. First, we used to just let a corporation know that we were aware they had been hacked, and then that's all they were told. And that was unacceptable. I mean, we would have never solved the Pitt bomb threat case without the fabulous work of Jinx Walton and her IT staff out there. So we took advantage of great victim outreach to get help. The second thing is we're now bringing the cases. I mean, what is the point if we're not going to do something about it? And to the naysayers who would say, and again, they are few and far between, that that this effort is futile because these people are far away, I say nonsense. We're going to bring the cases one after the other, and we're going to find a way to bring them to justice. And how we define justice will be, do we stop the criminal activity, and do we get accountability, and do we create deterrence? It's the same method we use in every other criminal case.
I'm thinking of the corporate cooperation and thinking about the case with PNC Bank and all the other banks that were targeted by the denial of service attacks, where right. The hackers basically just were trying to disrupt the system and trying to go in and prevent people from being able to access the banks. There would have been a point where it would have been inconceivable that a bank would have come to you and said, you know, hey, we need help from the federal government to fix this. In what ways has that changed? Are corporations in general more open to you coming in and saying, hey, you know, help us out here, help us solve this? And where is it appropriate for the federal government to do that?
Look, to answer your last question first, when we have a nascent nation state attack on an American corporation, in all times past, we responded as a nation. We didn't just turn to them and say, this is your problem. And that's the achievement of what we've done here in Pittsburgh in some of these cases. The corporate response is different by corporation and by circumstance. But I would tell you this with respect to financial institutions, because you raised the news today and the prior DDoS attacks that included PNC. There are two types of attacks against financial institutions generally. One is a DDoS attack where they flood the system to make it cumbersome to move through the system. And the second is where they infiltrate the system to gather financial information to steal. And if you look at the case against that we brought against Russia in June, against Bogachev for Gauze, that particular malware was designed to capitalize on top of a DDoS. So there may be a combination of attacks. So we need to be really smart, and we need to be really supportive of our financial institutions. We brought some experts here a couple years ago to talk about this cyber threat generally, particularly Paul Kaminsky, who you, I think, covered. And he talked in great lengths about the exposure that we face as individuals, as a company, and as a country if we don't get smart about this. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to lead the way in fighting this threat.
It's interesting you bring up the Kaminsky and the work you did by bringing him into Pittsburgh from the RAND Corporation. That was the first day that really opened my eyes that we're also talking about the potential for attacks on American infrastructure, on transportation systems or water systems. How real do you believe that threat is? We haven't really seen it here yet. There hasn't, you know, knock on wood, hasn't been a major threat like that. But is it something that you believe does exist out there, and how seriously do we have to take it?
The risk is real. I believe because of the steps we're taking, the threat is minimal. But as Paul Kaminsky said, and as your listeners should understand, many of our infrastructure systems rely upon the internet. So whether you're talking about our water supply, our transportation systems, our banking systems, or simply how we run machines in our factories, the internet is a potential access point for someone who would do us harm. And we are working very hard on an infrastructure basis on a national level with important work being done locally to reduce that threat.
It's funny you mentioned that. I mean, it's even down on the personal level now, right? To your refrigerator and your car and the heating system in your house, all these things are connected. And right. I mean, that sort of extends the vulnerability though too, right? We want the convenience, but it also means you're right. open to attack, right?
Right. And whether you're talking about theft or disruption, there's nobody anywhere in the world who believes that you should be able to use the internet to steal from people or to cause them harm. And it's just that simple. And if it's difficult, we do it because it's hard. President Kennedy said years ago, we go to the moon not because it's easy. We go there because it's hard. And that's the inspiration for this type of work.
So when the folks in Washington come to you and say, you know, David, you're doing a great job in Pittsburgh, you know, how do we learn from this? How do we double this down? What are some of the tips, the advice that you're giving? What have you done here that has been different or special that can be replicated in other parts of the country?
Well, it's a can-do approach that might be defined this way. If you're looking at why you can't get it done, you're not going to get it done. So we don't look at what the reasons why it won't work. We look at what we feel we have to do and just look forward. It might be akin to getting on an airplane and knowing you have a destination and ignoring the fuel gauge. It's not just faith, though, because I know I'm surrounded by very, very good people. But there is not a day that goes by that we are not interfacing with another U.S. Attorney's office or another FBI office or some form of law enforcement, and we're doing extensive victim outreach in this arena to tell people how they can protect themselves and tell others how they can take the model we've developed here in Pittsburgh and make it work.
So I have been accused over the years of being a real homer, somebody grew up here in Pittsburgh and having a lot of pride in the area, and I know you have a lot of pride in the area too. Can you talk a little bit, you know, the resources that we have here? You touched on it, the fact that there is CMU here and there are all these other resources, but how proud should Pittsburghers be that this has become something that, you know, a generation ago we were talking about the closure of steel mills and now we've sort of found a new life here. Right?
I think it is part of the story of the transformation of Pittsburgh. And in the law enforcement arena, I think we should be very proud. But it's also an opportunity because in law enforcement and the private sector, there is a real shortage of cyber proficient professionals. And so we've developed something called the Pittsburgh Cyber Initiative to try and work with the schools, work with the trade unions, get certification programs, working with the law schools to maybe develop cyber expertise for law students. There is a possibility here that not only could we serve the nation as we always have, because Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania has always responded, but this could be an opportunity for people to develop professional expertise.
We've been talking with David Hickton, the United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania. David, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
Coming up, we will leave the confines of Studio A for a tour of the Allegheny Observatory. I'm Andy Conti, in for Paul Guggenheimer, and you're listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.